Welcome to Friday. Welcome to KUOW's Week in Review. Good to have you along with us. I'm Bill Radke with Washington State's newest member of Congress, Democrat Pramila Jayapal. Welcome.
Great to be on.
Haven't seen you since. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Member.
I appreciate
Can you empathize with Donald Trump right now, having to build up your office and do all that stuff? Are you having dinner with Mitt Romney in a painful and awkward way?
I luckily am not doing any of those things.
Uh-huh. But you're on Week in Review. We're pleased. Thanks.
Yes.
Also, State Senator from Spokane, Michael Baumgartner, is on the line. He's at Spokane Public Radio. Hey, Michael, Senator, welcome.
Hey, guys. Great to be on with you. Hey, Pramila.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Good. I like starting out with you and empathy of Donald Trump. This is going to go the right way, I can tell already.
You heard that was Bill saying that, right, Mike?
Yeah, let's just be clear. You know, your re-election isn't for 2 years. You got a little space here. So,
Senator Baumgartner, I understand that you said you found state legislator Jayapal fun and effective on areas of agreement, and you enjoyed helping kill many of her lefty radical bills.
Yeah, that's about right. You know, Pramila has talent. There's no doubt about that. And she is fun to work with. We have very, very different views, I think, on most things. But we did find a way to work together on issues like higher education and some local issues. So she was fun to work with. And I'm sure she'll I'll be throwing shoes at her when I see her on TV every night. But I know behind the scenes, she'll probably have some good relationships with folks.
All right. I look forward to getting into that more. The host of Public Radio's Live Wire, which you'll hear tomorrow at 5 o'clock, but which is happening live at the Neptune in Seattle tonight. Luke Burbank's here. Hey, Luke.
Hey there, Bill. How's
Looking forward to seeing you at the show, but I couldn't wait. So
yeah, tonight welcome. We will be at the Neptune. The show doors at 7. Show starts at 8. We've got a great cast of guests, and Bill Radke will be there in the audience. So
that's the big draw.
And that's
not Maria Semple.
That's how people think of this, as a chance to go up and stand awkwardly next to Bill Radke at the bar at the Neptune Theater.
Yes. Let's get into the news of the week here. How many topics in 2017 on this show will begin with the words, "This week President Trump tweeted"? This week, President Trump tweeted that Boeing is overcharging for the new presidential 747 called Air Force One. Cancel the order, exclamation mark, he wrote.
Well, the plane is totally out of control. It's going to be over $4 billion. It's for Air Force One program. And I think it's ridiculous. I think Boeing is doing a little bit of a number. We want Boeing to make a lot of money, but not that much money.
That's the president-elect amplifying his tweet. And Boeing claimed to be mystified by Trump's numbers. There was speculation that Trump was mad at Boeing's CEO for comments about trade with China. Senator Baumgartner, what do you make of all this? Did the president-elect do anything wrong?
Well, you know, I think Trump's kind of living rent-free in a lot of the media's head and a lot of the left-wingers' head, and they'd be well-served to relax, you know, a little bit. He's still president-elect, and if he yanks the chain and everybody chases it that hard, it's going to be a very, very interesting, not just first year, but 4 years. So I think my main reaction to it is reflections on the left's overreaction to what he's saying.
Well, if he does more of this, calling out particular companies, here's what he said, for example, about Boeing. He said, that's what I'm here for. I'm going to negotiate prices. Planes are too expensive, and we're going to get the prices down. And if we don't get the prices down, we're not going to order them. Is that a good way for the president to operate, in your view, when he's actually president?
Well, I think what we're going to see is a lot of Democrats return to being interested in issues like federalism, the rule of law, non-executive decision-making, and all the things that Republicans have been complaining about for the last 8 years when we've seen overreach from the Obama administration. And, you know, a lot of folks on the left have been, well, any means necessary, and that's fine. So, no, I mean, what we should all want is changes in policy ought to be made at the legislative level or in Congress, you know, and the executive branch is really about implementing those policies. And so hopefully we'll get back to basics on the Constitution and strengthen the institution, not the personality. You know, when I was doing counterinsurgency in Iraq and Afghanistan, we always talked about building institutions, not people, because institutions last. And I think we'll see a lot of Democrats turn to that sort of focus.
We have one of those Democrats here, Congressmember Jayapal. You represent people who work for Boeing here in Western Washington now. What were you thinking about when you saw the Trump charge?
Well, I just think that, you know, he has got to understand that he is president-elect now. He's not a campaigner. He cannot try to legislate or negotiate by Twitter in 140 characters. I mean,
well, why not? It was a tweet. He said he talked to the CEO. What's wrong with that?
Because, and we've seen this not just on this issue, but, you know, on foreign affairs. I mean, he is sending out messages that people take very seriously because this is an important position. It's the president-elect of the United States, soon to be president. And I think he has to understand that everything he says is going to reverberate because he is saying it. And he's reveling in it. I understand that. He likes it. He's not going to give up his Twitter account. But I think he has to understand that his words have consequences. And I think it's a very dangerous precedent that he's setting by, you know, sort of calling out and threatening people with what is going to happen through Twitter. I think that's not the way the president should operate. And I think that he is the guy, and we saw in one of the stories, he's the guy that said, we're going to bring jobs back to the United States. We're going to, you know, invest in manufacturing. And the numbers that he gave on the Boeing deal are just not accurate. I mean, the only contract that Boeing has right now is for $170 million to start to look at what is needed. And what we're talking about is the plane that has to be really manufactured in such a way that it has incredible ability to fight off, you know, terrorist attacks, to be in the air for a long period of time. This is going to be one of the most advanced aircrafts, if not the most advanced aircraft in the world. And I think he has to understand that that process needs to continue. So I would love to see him understand that the role of a president and the role of a president-elect is really to try and negotiate behind the scenes, to try to bring people together and ultimately to represent everybody in this country. And so far, I certainly haven't seen that.
Well, Trump does have an airplane. If he wants to save taxpayers money, he could just pay for the missile avoidance system and the electromagnetic shielding and the midair refueling equipment on his own plane.
He'd have to pay for all of that to upgrade it. I mean, he can't just use his plane.
For 8 years, I think if everything that Trump says, if there's an automatic 180 opposite direction reaction from the Democrats on it, I think it's going to be, and certainly you should speak out if you think things are going wrong. But if this thing continues going on the path that everything Trump says is wrong because it's Trump, you know, it's going to be really interesting 4 years, and the partisan divide is only going to worsen. You know, for 8 years, Joe Biden, as vice president, who also a colorful character, has kind of been in what I'd call the Biden zone, where he could basically take his shirt off and dance on a dining room table and everybody'd say, that's just Joe being Joe. So, and then he gets interpreted in that light. So it would be certainly the president does have a huge role, and he must be careful in how he communicates. But I think the entire world now understands that that Donald Trump is different in how he communicates and the way he communicates and the meaning by how he communicates.
I definitely agree with you there.
I mean, look, here's the thing, though. I feel like when Donald Trump says these things, if it's via Twitter or standing in front of Trump Tower, it has real world impact. For instance, if I read this right, Boeing's stock went down
initially, although it's actually up since then.
Okay,
so
well,
if he was trying to press the stock, it didn't work.
But it's not just, I mean, he's not just sort of, throwing out comments that have like no impact. It's like if you own stock in that company,
right,
and Donald Trump is just feeling dyspeptic on a morning,
yeah,
and now you lost money. I saw an interesting quote from a, I believe, unnamed Boeing employee in one of the papers who voted for Trump, but is now worried that his rhetoric could actually cost them this project and their job. And I have to say, as a person who wasn't a supporter of Trump and who wants things to work well in this country, there is some perverse glee I have in the notion that people who elected this guy, or in Washington State tried to elect him, those chickens may come home to roost. I mean, this is the part of the movie, if we flash forward 2 or 3 years, where all of the minions who thought that this person could save them realize he can't save them, and then they turn on the leader of the minions.
Senator Baumgartner, do you worry that President Trump overpromised in the campaign? There's a lot been made from Trump supporters even saying, we didn't take him that literally. We took him seriously. We didn't take him literally. Do you have any concerns about his fulfilling his promises?
Well, what I think Trump will probably largely do is I think he'll delegate a lot of issues. I think he'll concentrate on our two or three big issues. And I think unlike the last 8 years where there's a lot of leeway when Biden said anything and sort of the interpretation came through more through the president. And I certainly think there's been a lot of mistakes made the last 8 years. You only have to look at the Middle East, some of these issues. But I think now I think, you know, Mike Pence, I think, you know, has this interesting role of as the vice president of sort of synthesizing a lot of these comments in terms of directions. But, you know, we'll see. You know, stay tuned. This is certainly a different way of doing it.
Well, I think it's tough to defend the president-elect right now. And I just say, Mike, you know, in the last 8 years, if you look at the last 8 years, it's not Biden we should be looking at. It's the fact that Republicans consistently from day one said we're going to do whatever we can to block President Obama. That is not what Democrats have said in this administration. I think people have been saying, let's wait and see. Is he going to be different as a president than he is as a candidate? But I got to tell you, the people that he's appointing into some of these positions, including, you know, Jeff Sessions as attorney general, even Republicans didn't confirm Jeff Sessions. The latest pick for Secretary of Labor, somebody who has spent his life arguing against labor unions, against workers, against raising the minimum wage, a topic you and I have had many discussions on and will continue to, I'm sure. But this is not the behavior of a president who I think is really going to govern for everybody. Steve Bannon, who has brought so much ire correctly, because this is a guy who has literally promoted views of white supremacists on Breitbart. I mean, this is a terrifying moment for many people. And I think Luke is absolutely right that there are real world impacts when Donald Trump says something, and it's about stock prices, but it's also about foreign affairs. It's about the United States relationship with different countries. There is so much here that is at stake. And I really hope that he starts to understand that he's got to start to work not off of 140 characters.
Can I ask a question? Can he actually do this? Like, is the president the person who's in charge of Air Force One and the purchasing of Air Force One? Isn't that the Air Force?
No, he would have a lot of authority over that. But you're right to say on a lot of things he's been threatening, including, you know, stopping funding to cities or states that are, quote, sanctuary cities. There's a lot of things that he does not have the ability to do. It would have to go through Congress. But certainly if he chooses to wait, put his thumb on the scale.
Except for the fact that these planes won't be done until after Donald Trump has served.
Right. That's
what some of us hope will be his first and only 4 years. Yeah. In other words, this is somebody else's Air Force One potentially that he's messing with.
Let's talk about one of these what cabinet picks in particular, because President-elect Trump reportedly, some media outlets are reporting, Wall Street Journal and others, that Trump will appoint or nominate Eastern Washington member of Congress, highest-ranking Republican woman in Congress, Kathy McMorris Rodgers, to be Interior Secretary, which first of all would leave open that congressional seat. Senator Baumgartner, would you run for that?
Well, I can't talk about that right now. Stay tuned maybe a little later before we can discuss whether
that doesn't sound like a no.
We're talking like a yes. And Mike, you've already told me that you want those Diet Cokes in Congress, so now you get to have your own fridge with Diet Cokes.
If you just joined us, we're talking with United States Congress member Michael Baumgartner.
The thing that's kind of funny, Pramila, is I thought we did such a good job of training you in the minority in the Senate that now we would have the same role in the House. I don't know if I'd be able to kill your bills off, you know, hypothetically speaking, just out of the get-go, but you certainly would be well skilled.
I don't think you'd be the only one trying to kill him, Mike. There's probably people with 20 years of seniority that would be right in front of you.
Well, hypothetically speaking, if that were to pass, we would both have, I'm sure, be way down the totem pole.
That sounds like a yes, Bill. That definitely sounds like
a lot of yes.
I have no comment on that. I would say, Pramila, back on the other issues, I do find some great irony in how much you approved of executive orders and doing things by fiat from President Obama, and now changing your tune on everything going through Congress with the new president.
Well, I haven't weighed in on anything that Donald Trump has said on executive order. I absolutely was in favor of President Obama's executive orders on DACA, on DAPA, on a number of things because he was working with a Congress whose number one goal was to stop him from doing anything.
But the question is executive overreach that he would be setting a precedent for President Trump or any other president.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that.
Yeah. Okay,
I want to throw one quick thing, and I'm not a congressperson, a potential congressperson. I'm just a humble public radio host.
Congressmember Luke Burbank, go on.
Thank you. I am declaring my candidacy for that spot. I don't think it's the idea that the president, as the executive, would make decisions and even have executive orders. I think it's the way that these ideas are floated. Like, to just throw it out on Twitter and then see that ripple effect is what, to me, is actually a little bit disturbing. It's not that Donald Trump as the president wants to make decisions. It's that, like, I want those decisions to go through some levels and to be put out there in a way that doesn't, like, continually rock the boat. Every morning I get up, I look at my Twitter account, and I start to break out in hives because I'm going to see a bunch of things that the president-elect threw out to the wider world that I don't know if he's really thought through.
Okay, the president, let's pause it there. The president-elect has rented space in Luke Burbank's head, as Senator Baumgartner put it. Let's move on to our next topic here on The Week in Review, which is that Hillary Clinton says the proliferation of fake news is an epidemic. She says the false news reports circulating online are a danger that must be addressed quickly. This week, a man fired an assault rifle at a D.C. pizza shop. He said he was there to investigate an online report that Clinton and her campaign were running a child sex ring at the restaurant. Obviously, to some of us, that's not true. Hillary Clinton wants to give more power, wants actually Congress to give itself more power, Congressmember Jayapal, to respond to foreign propaganda. That's what Hillary Clinton said. How does that sound like a good idea to you?
Well,
how do you vote?
I mean, I don't know what the exact proposal is, and I think that there are people trying to figure out what is actually appropriate, right? Because we do have free speech rights. There's a lot of issues that are tied up in this. But I do think the proliferation of fake news is terrifying. I think that we should be looking to and asking for help from some of our social media companies. There was a really good article that I read in the New York Times about you know, how some of the models for social media are actually built on how quickly something goes viral. And if you look at Twitter accounts of white supremacists, there was a report just released by GWU that those Twitter accounts have increased by, I forget what the number was, 600% or something since 2012. So we have got to understand, one, how we provide news that actually is factual. It is ridiculous to me that a surrogate for Donald Trump would say there is no such thing as fact. I mean, that was one of...
She is also the person who called it a Mazel Tov cocktail.
So is that right?
I think that should have been a little bit of a heads
up. It should have been a heads up, Luke. You're absolutely right. But this is what we have. And it goes back to your point from the last thing. This isn't just about what somebody says. It is about the fact that we need to have, as president and as sources that are reporting, a set of organizations and a president who actually understands that there are facts, that we need to stick to those facts, that we need to be reasoned and thoughtful, that we need to set a precedent and a model, a role model for people. And I think the fake news is undermining all of that. And Donald Trump is helping to undermine all of that.
During the campaign, Trump said, "I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money." He was talking about the lamestream media. We already have libel laws, though. The problem is the Communications Decency Act of 1995 said it's legal for sites to be libelous, but for sites to post defamatory claims. Senator Baumgartner, should we change that?
Well, you know, my wife is a British journalist and was shocked when she came to the U.S. Actually, Eleanor's almost an American. We're working on that path right now. But, you know, she was pretty surprised when she came to the U.S. and with the libel and slander situation with public officials. I think it's a total non-starter to think that there's going to be some council of smart people in Washington, D.C. that's going to decide what's fake and what's not. I mean, thank God we have the First Amendment. But I do think if that situation is going to get looked at, it would be more along the lines of what President-elect Trump has talked about. And could you put some safeguards there and learn from other experiences? But it is a concern, you know, certainly when you have mental health issues combined with fake news.
I'm looking at a tweet from Matthew Iglesias, who's a writer for Vox, And he wrote today, fake news is the natural manifestation of financial capitalism in the media industry. Mm. And I think it's really interesting that a lot of these folks that were generating stories that they admitted were made up or so extremely questionable, that they were those folks that were doing that, and that these stories were getting passed around on Facebook and other places more than real stories being written by the Wall Street Journal or the Seattle Times. Like, they admitted that they were making a lot of money doing this.
Yeah.
This is the same week that the Seattle Times is announcing that they're trying to do another round of layoffs. Mm-hmm. And I think that the media landscape right now is changing so rapidly, and the financial situation and the economic model is changing. There's more money sometimes in just making up a story and putting it on Facebook. And by the way, this goes on the right and the left. I think that the sort of right-wing, alt-right stuff has gotten a lot of attention because it's seen as part of why Trump got elected. But it happens on the left, too. It's people, like, just putting out wild speculation, and then it picks up steam. Suddenly, your mom's putting it on Facebook. She doesn't know what's up, but her 11 friends see it. It's an extremely hard thing to rein in. But when you hear someone say, like this Trump surrogate did the other day on the Diane Rehm show, that essentially there's no such thing as a fact, that's a really scary thing to hear somebody say. Like, I don't want to live in a post-factual America.
Yeah. This was Scotty Nell Hughes on CNN, who later clarified that she meant to say that people don't believe the other side's facts, which is just stating the obvious. But she got a lot of attention for saying there's no such thing anymore as facts.
And a number of his surrogates during the campaign defended him by saying certain things were not factual. We've certainly had this argument on climate change for a long time on specific policies, but it is, I think, scary because it is not just that and that's why I mentioned companies like Facebook and Twitter, you know, how can we work with them? Because they do actually, there is a profitable model to be made by having certain things go viral, whether they're true or not. So we will need their help. And I also think that, you know, what happens now is then a TV station like Fox News will take it and then give it that much more air. So there's a whole media environment that is designed to focus not on what's true anymore, but actually on what's popular or what sensationalizes.
Senator Baumgartner,
on the subject of fake news, let me add that I've been asked by many to consider a run for the Seattle City Council, and I'm strongly considering that.
Uh-huh.
There's lots of problems over there, and they need to look to conservatives in Eastern Washington to help
my
out.
My guest is Seattle City Council member Michael Baumgartner.
I am listening, people of Seattle.
Yeah. Are you concerned, Senator Baumgartner from Eastern Washington, from Spokane? You've said let's not be too partisan and let's not be hypocritical, but party aside, are you concerned about any president, Trump or future, being as loose with the facts as President-elect Trump is, even if you even buy that? What's your take?
Well, I think if you look at the history of America, elected officials forming the facts to fit a narrative or what they how they decide to do is probably not a new thing. I think what is new is
Thomas
the
Jefferson
way in which
actually paid a surrogate to call John Adams a hermaphroditical character, and I'm not making that up. Go on.
Well, yeah, you should see my email inbox sometimes. But right. I don't think this is new. I think the way in which the president-elect is communicating, but I think that's the move to social media. And so, you know, again, I would return to strengthen the institutions. You know, look at federalism, look at the rule of law, have Congress take back some of its authority. And to do that, you have to, you know, be consistent, from both sides of the political aisle to strengthen the role of the legislature in the people's house.
I have to give the senator credit on this point. As a non-Trump supporter, I immediately after the election day saw the value of having an underground bunker and shelf-stable food and possibly some weaponry to defend myself. I'm not even kidding. My first thought was, we got to really make a states' rights push and make Washington this, you know, kind of its own little Eden. Of course, that's my feeling because I personally don't feel great about how the federal government will be run for the next few years. Mm-hmm. But it did give me a chance to understand how a lot of people have felt when, and particularly people who tend to be on the conservative side of things, when they feel like the federal government doesn't reflect their interests and isn't looking out for them.
All right. You feel out of control. Okay, we're going to come back with more. By the way, that Thomas Jefferson, I should read the entire tweet. It said, hashtag make America great now and hope it stays that way. That was the full, just to put it in context. So we're going to talk about the east side of the state splitting off and becoming the state of liberty, and also stores with no checkout clerks in them. and more coming up on The Week in Review with Michael Baumgartner, Pramila Jayapal, and Luke Burbank. Coming back. On KUOW's Week in Review, we're spending the hour with Congresswoman-elect Pramila Jayapal and Washington State Senator Republican Michael Baumgartner and the host of Public Radio's Live Wire on KUOW, Luke Burbank. We'll see you at the live show this evening.
Indeed.
Neptune. And now we want to talk about a proposal that came up again this week. Some eastern Washington state legislators are proposing to split Washington in two. We were just talking about suddenly, feeling differently about states' rights. Some eastern Washington lawmakers want to split Washington up and rename the eastern half the State of Liberty. From the Spokesman Review, Jim Camden told us what the State of Liberty would look like.
It would be a more rural state. It would be a resource-based economy, agriculture. There are wheat farms and apple orchards and cattle ranches, and the Hanford Nuclear Reservation is in the Tri-Cities, but I mean, the boundaries would still be Canada, Oregon, and Idaho. Three of the boundaries would be the same. And there would just be a sign, I guess, at the top of Snoqualmie Pass that would say, now entering Washington or now entering Liberty.
Senator Baumgartner, this would add another red state. Do you support the new State of Liberty?
I think that's I'm going to interpret that largely as a symbolic bill rather than a one intended to pass.
Okay.
I do know that, I've been to over 80 countries around the world and spent a lot of time in great different places. But there is no place like Eastern Washington. It's the highest quality of life and the best place. And we just don't want too many people from Seattle to know that. So you guys stay on your side of the mountains.
Wait a minute, because person from the Spokesman Review, Jim Camden, said the opposite, that the east side would like some visitors.
Hey, why don't you go over to the eastern side of the state so that you know what's over there? Because east siders are much more likely to come over to the west side than I think west siders are to go to the east side. So I know a lot of people in Seattle who think that there is nothing between Seattle and Spokane but desert, which isn't really true because there's a beautiful river gorge, the Columbia River Gorge. The state is pretty diverse, and you should get around if mostly what you do is spend your time in Seattle or Tacoma and driving up and down I-5.
Sounds like east siders are more curious and cosmopolitan and well-traveled than people in the west who tend to stay kind of holed up and provincial.
If you have not been...
Oh, we're way more sophisticated in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Come over for a visit, buy our apples, buy our wheat, but leave your yurts and your Birkenstocks over in the rainy part of the state.
Hey, wait a minute. I was going to say something nice about the east side of the state, which is if you have not been to Loon Lake outside of Spokane, where I try to make as many yearly pilgrimages as I can, you have not lived, you have not enjoyed Washington State. This is a beautiful place, and I love the biodiversity of this state. I love how the west side is often sort of rainy and has one vibe to it. Mm-hmm. The east side is warm in the summertime, has great snowfall in the winter. I have two politicians on the show here, so you guys probably know the facts of this more than I do, but my understanding is that a lot of the counties in eastern Washington do not pay enough in taxes to support the services in those counties, which makes this move, if it were to happen, and I understand it's symbolic, it seems like borrowing trouble on behalf of the eastern part of the state.
The president of Spokane City Council said, quote, it's like literally standing up and saying eastern Washington needs to shoot itself in the foot, because presumably he's talking about the fact that eastern Washington gets more in services than they pay in taxes.
Yeah, I think that, and I agree with you, there's so many beautiful parts of the state. My favorite is the Yakima River Canyon. I love fishing down there. I mean, it is so gorgeous.
Pramila's running for governor.
No, I go over to the east side a lot because I spend a lot of time in Northeast Oregon. And so I often spend time driving through, and it is an amazing state. But just in terms of the facts, I think when I first got to the Senate, Judy Warnick, colleague on the other side of the aisle, really great woman, said to me that she thought that, we really need to think about how we talk about things, because even though the port is on the west side of the state, the reality is everybody in Yakima, Eastern Washington, all the growers, they need that port to be successful because that is how their product gets shipped out. So we clearly have a situation where, you know, there is a there seems to be an ideological divide sometimes, but at the same time, Western Washington is paying for a lot of the services that Eastern Washington gets. And I think we're going to, you know, we just have to recognize we're really closely tied together. You can't just separate the two, and I wouldn't want to see that.
Are you freeloading, okay, Senator Baumgartner?
You got to listen up on this thing. Okay. Hold on a second here. Let us harvest our timber. Let us develop our natural resources. Stop imposing far-left business regulation that may or may not work in downtown Seattle, but certainly isn't appropriate for border communities. And get
Mike,
the heck out of our way, and then let's talk about the tax.
You're just sore
base,
that
right?
We passed that $13.50 minimum wage. And, you know, if you had taken my $12 bill, you would have had a much better minimum wage for your side.
Now it's on.
You know, Pramila, all far-left radical bills are fun to kill, but yours are particularly salty.
Hey, I was so happy that it got killed because I got a much better deal in the end. So thank you so much for that. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so, stay tuned.
All right. So maybe the bill is not going to pass to create the State of Liberty any more than it's passed when it was proposed 100 years ago.
I thought the senator was joining us from Spokane just because of scheduling issues, but I see that he and the soon-to-be congresswoman just should not even be in the same radio studio.
Right.
There's so much animus. It is palpable.
That's affection, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought you still owe me the Diet Cokes, Pramila, no matter what happens. That's the deal.
Aren't Eastsiders frustrated about your lack of liberty anyway? Isn't that I'm always hearing that there's that you're being control, that the feds are always telling you what to do. It should be the state of tyranny. It should be the...
Well, no, because it's aspirational.
Right,
I
see, aspirational.
It's like we are creating... It's why we started calling them freedom fries back when I used to cover Congress.
But let me be serious for a second. You know, the poorest county in the state is Ferry County. And you go up there, and these are people that are really on hard times because they used to be able to harvest their timber. They can't do it anymore. They used to be able to harvest their have a history of developing their natural resources. And basically the federal government has taken that away. You know, Danny Westneat likes to point out, oh, these hypocrites up in Ferry County, we have more of them on government welfare than almost anywhere else in the state. You know, it's because ill-fitting poor government regulation from Olympia and from Washington, D.C. keeps them from making a living. So that's where it needs to start.
Can I ask something, Senator Baumgartner? Do
sure.
you feel, I mean, honestly, do you feel that the lives of people in a place like Ferry County and the Ferry counties that exist all over the United States, working class people, people who've fallen largely on hard times, do you think their lives are going to be appreciably better 4 years from now? Do you think the policies that Donald Trump is proposing will actually make a positive impact in the lives of those people?
Absolutely. If we get a Secretary of Interior that allows more development of natural resources, I think you're going to see a big development in rural America and in the Appalachians and some of these places that will really make the difference. And I think what I would say to the listeners in Seattle is every level of government starts with respect to the people. And even though we have different views in different parts of our great state, it's got to start with a level of respect and trying to put yourselves in their shoes and getting up there and talking to them. And I would again go back to, let's have more local government control, more local decision making. You know, let's go back to the Constitution and a lot of how these things work, because what's right for downtown Seattle in Bainbridge Island and Vashon isn't what's right for Ferry County and up in Colville and somewhere places in eastern Washington.
Well, I agree with you there, but I just want to point out that, you know, let's just look at minimum wage as one example. We've had red states and blue states passing minimum wage increases. If you think about what minimum wage would be at if it were to have kept up with inflation over the course of the years, it would be at $21. So when President Obama proposes a $10 minimum wage and Republicans, including those representing working class counties across this country, say we can't do that, it's going to kill business, it is completely ignoring the fact that in order for business to thrive, workers need to have money, they need to be able to buy things, they need to be able to actually support those businesses that are out there. So I don't think that working class people are saying that we don't, there's a lot of ground where I think Republicans have not been speaking up for the very counties and the very people that they represent. And let's not forget that 2.5 or 2.3 million people more across this country voted for somebody other than Donald Trump, and about what 47% or so didn't vote at all. So he was elected by a very small minority, and I don't believe that what he is setting up for in this next administration is going to help people who desperately need it, in Ferry County and elsewhere.
I want to give Senator Baumgartner the last word on this because you're outnumbered, and then we're going to move on to another topic. Any final thought?
Sure. I have a request, Pramila, a sincere request on the minimum wage issue, because she is a leader on it. You know, Hanauer in the past has made some public mention that maybe Eastern Washington is a little different. I also was serving Thanksgiving dinner at a homeless shelter. Shelter folks said the minimum wage requirements on them is actually going to really, really hurt them. And so if there was some room to maneuver for by geography or for nonprofits on that minimum wage issue, and people like Pramila, even though she's in Congress, could maybe allow that space to happen politically, talk to Nick, you know, it would help. So think about it.
Okay. Pause on that while we talk now about this. Is, by the way, that state senator from Spokane, Michael Baumgartner, a Republican. We have Congresswoman-elect Pramila Jayapal with us, a Democrat, and the host of Live Wire on KUOW, Luke Burbank. I want to talk about one more issue of statewide concern. We're wondering if this is the year when the legislature is finally going to spend enough on education to stop the Supreme Court holding lawmakers in contempt. You know, the court ruled 4 years ago the state is not abiding by our state's constitution. But Senator Baumgartner, you have another idea, which is to change the constitution. Will you please explain?
Yeah, I want. I don't think our state's constitution is set up for the education needs of our kids, and I want every student, every parent in this state to have as wide a range of education choices. If they want to be able to go to a school that's taught in Chinese, if they want to be able to go to a vocational school that focuses more on the trades, if they want to decide for themselves. And right now, our state's constitution doesn't allow that. And so if you're somebody that believes in more choice, more innovation, and more parental involvement from the community level in schools, you got to look at changing our state's constitution. And that's what my bill does. Now, obviously, that's a very high threshold. So part of this is also the starting point for negotiation and what's going to be a very big year in the legislature for K-12.
Congressmember Jayapal, you left the state legislature so you wouldn't have to deal with this McCleary issue anymore. That's not true, by the way.
No.
Kidding. What do you think of amending our state constitution?
Look, I think it's interesting that Senator Baumgartner was talking about how we have to adhere to the constitution. Now he wants to change it in the state. And Mike, you know, I think that the reality is 50 states in the country have free public education in their constitutions. It is really important that we commit to the kids across our state who deserve to have an education, and that we do that by funding public education. And so I don't think that this will pass. I think this is a statement, as you said, but I think it is troubling to me that, you know, there was so much attempt to take out Supreme Court justices in this last election because of their role, and now to try and take them out again ignores the fact that all of them were returned overwhelmingly. And so we don't have the public in this state saying we need to change the Constitution. We have the public saying let's fund free public education, and state legislature, do your job and come up with the money.
You know, I'm a product of the Seattle Public Schools. I went to Daniel Bagley Elementary School. I graduated from Nathan Hale High School. I'm a kid who was on free lunch. You know, for me, the great part about going to Seattle Public Schools was the variety of people that I was in class with. You know, kids from all different kinds of backgrounds. And had there been the option for a lot of those kids who come from families that were able to sort of mobilize and find the ideal charter school, the high-achieving school, if you could have sort of removed the high-achieving kids or potentially high-achieving kids from the school and put them somewhere else, first of all, I don't know if I would have been in that group, but I think that school would have been a worse place for it. I think what we learn in school is not just the stuff they're putting up on the blackboard, but it's just being around people who are different than us. And if everybody gets to take their tax dollars and go off to their own little private setup that caters to them, I think we lose that. And so I'm a fan of
the school. That's a totally absurd straw man. I mean,
how so?
Both my parents are public educators and wonderful public educators, and I went to both wonderful public schools and great private schools. What I'm saying in the Seattle experience would be, wouldn't it be wonderful if those poor kids could get the same chance to go to O'Day or the other elite private schools where Bill Gates sent his kids as everybody else? Nobody's saying just take the smart kids. Well, what I'm trying to say is let's have as much choice and innovation as possible.
Yeah, I mean, but what it is take
the fact that we're
kids.
Still stuck on a 9-month school year, and every year the teachers union fights to teach less and less for higher and higher pay. I mean, our kids ought to be going to school 11 months a year and get off the aggregating thing, but you can't do that with the way our state's constitution is set up. And so that's all we're trying to do here. And again, it is a very high bar. It'll be very difficult, but that's the direction the conversation should be going.
No, look, I mean, the arguments in the state legislature last year all the time from your side of the aisle was, you know, let's help these kids have a better opportunity. Well, the way to help those kids have a better opportunity is to invest in good public education and fund the public schools so that people aren't trying to get out of them. And
should everybody eat at the same restaurant? If they're one government restaurant that has a really good menu and everybody goes to one clothing shop by the government that has
we're not talking about choice, competition, innovation. No, we're talking about the opportunity for every kid in this state to get a strong public free education. And the state has, because of Republicans in the state legislature for the last couple of years, we have not funded our public school system, and you can't get away from that. If you want to talk
to me about choice
after we fund the public schools, then let's do that. But let's fund the public schools first and see if we can get all kids to stay in the public school system and not give them a reason to say we got to get out of this. And then a very tiny group of kids actually gets to go out and be in another school. We need to fund public schools and make it accessible for every kid in the state. That is a constitutional duty, and it's a moral duty.
Why is it always elite liberals that send their kids to private schools and then let
Hey, my kid
kids
is a proud graduate of Garfield High School. Garfield High School, thrilled to have him have gone through the public school system, and I think every kid should have the opportunity to get a good public education.
Let them choose. I just like being referred to as an elite. It's probably the first time that's ever happened.
KUOW's Week in Review. We'll see when the legislative session starts in January whether this legislature will find some way to conform to the state Supreme Court ruling. We are going to talk about getting what you want without checking through employees. We're going to talk about the Huskies' upcoming demolishing of the
I got a hot take on that, by the way.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. Coming up on the Week in Review. On the Week in Review on KUOW, we have the host of Live Wire, Luke Burbank, State Senator Michael Baumgartner, and Congresswoman-elect Pramila Jayapal. I'm Bill Radke, and together we represent a higher number of people than someday you will see in your average store. When you go in and get your retail items, Amazon announced this week they'll open an automated convenience store in Seattle with no checkout. You walk in, you pick up your groceries, you walk out. Here's part of the ad for the store coming to Seattle's Belltown neighborhood.
4 years ago, we started to wonder, what would shopping look like if you could walk into a store, grab what you want, and just go? What if we could weave the most advanced machine learning, computer vision, and AI into the very fabric of a store so you never have to wait in line? No lines, no checkouts, no registers. Welcome to Amazon Go.
Luke Burbank, no more checkout. Good news, bad news, or no news?
I have to admit, I watched this video like a lot of people did, and it seemed pretty dang convenient to me. I was thinking about the sort of moments in your life when you're just trying to get something to eat or something else. You don't have a lot of time. I think it's kind of a cool thing they're doing, even though I know there's been some speculation that this is the beginning of the end of people working in grocery stores, or at least checking people out of grocery stores. But I don't know what you can really do about that. Like, I mean, what are we going to make it illegal to use cool technology to make people's lives easier because it doesn't It doesn't help preserve certain jobs. I mean, I don't know what the answer to that is.
The head of the grocery store workers union says Amazon is masking its blind greed as progress. This is not about improving customer experience. It's about destroying good jobs with no regard to the families and communities impacted. Congresswoman Jayapal, any opinion?
Well, this is just a huge issue across our country because we are moving into this age of new technologies and less jobs for people who used to fill those. And to me, it comes down to what is the purpose of a corporation ultimately? And I do think we have to look at that. I mean, when corporations were first being chartered, there was a lot more regulation around what are they there to do and how do they benefit society? And if we have a society where every single job is automated and, you know, we don't have jobs for people, what does that mean in terms of what our economy looks like, how people actually are able to further their own education? So I understand the convenience aspect. I definitely had that piece to, you know, oh, okay, that would be convenient. And it happens in hotels right now. If you take something out of the mini bar in certain hotels, you know, it automatically puts it onto the bill. So I understand that technology is being used. But I think we have to really challenge our corporations, our unions, everybody to step up and say, all right, how are we going to ensure that we have jobs in this new economy? It is a new new age, and there is a new responsibility for all of us to really think about how we protect good jobs for people and don't automate the heck out of everything.
Senator Baumgartner, there's a coalition of some conservatives, liberals, libertarians and tech executives who see that jobs are just going to be given over to robots in some sectors, and that we should have that the government should provide a basic universal income. Any thoughts?
Yeah, my thought is that Pramila should stop increasing all these regulations, or we're all going to be working for the robots. I mean, go home and watch, the Terminator series, Pramila. You know, that's where we're headed, you know, with this stuff.
But that documentary, Terminator.
The situation, the solution isn't basic, you know, income. That's something for college classrooms to talk about. But it's getting out of the way of small business, letting the market work, you know, and helping the little guy. And you don't help the little guy.
Amazon
by
is not small
for downtown
business,
downtown Seattle,
Mike.
And imposing them on the rest of the state. So.
Amazon is not small business.
I don't want to be running from attack robots with you. You know, I will if I have to, but you can stop this now. You know, this is your time.
Can I just mention something that might humanize this story a little bit?
Yes, please continue with comment.
Radkeybot 5000 is malfunctioning. Can we reboot him? I found out this week that a friend of mine has been working on the design of this store for the last 2 years, but because of various non-disclosures, couldn't talk about it. Okay. And so he texted me. I just think this is an experience many of us have had if we're in relationships. He said, I haven't been able to talk to my wife for 2 years about what I've been working on. When I was able to tell her on Monday, her response was, oh, neat.
Honey, sit down.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got something to tell you.
Yeah.
Years in the making.
So even the people who design the store are humans with feelings that are sometimes hurt by their spouses.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that there is, if you take this back to the election and what's happening to people across the country, if you look at the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the arguments around that, if you look at so much of what's happening, it is that there is this giant change happening in this country. And people don't know where they stand. They don't know how they're going to put food on the table. They don't know how they're going to have the skills. And to me, that is also a different kind of humanizing of the situation, right? Because real people are going to lose their jobs out of this and not have the ability to really take care of their families. That's what I think
we need to start doing
is
building a cyborg Bernie Sanders to go forward in future and save us from this impending robot war that Pramila is creating with her regulation.
By the way,
let the free market work and help small business, you know.
Oh, that worked so well, don't you think? Trickle-down economics just did us so well.
Okay, this is the Amazon Go store that is in beta, if that's the word, in Belltown, and is supposed to open up to the public in early 2017. Meanwhile, you can go watch the Michael Moore documentary, Terminator, to familiarize yourself with our future. We're with Luke Burbank and Michael Baumgartner, Pramila Jayapal. Finally, let's close out here by talking about the fact that tonight the Sounders play for the Major League Soccer Championship. The Seahawks, tomorrow, the Seahawks are leading their division. The Huskies are preparing for the college football championships. You'd think we're all feeling good. Luke Burbank, why are you unthrilled about the upcoming Husky game against the number one Alabama Crimson Tide?
As a dyed-in-the-wool UW Husky football fan, I went there. I remember the days of Vince Weatherby at tailback. I like obsessed Husky fan throughout my life. I would so much rather we just went to the Rose Bowl and won, and we're like seventh at the end of the year.
Lowering your sights.
That's right. I know this isn't like the way that a champion approaches life, but we are going to go to what is basically a home game for Alabama, which the 538 blog says is the most powerful college football team in the history of college football.
They're never wrong at the 538
block. Right, that's right. And we're going to go on the road to Georgia and play in the Peach Bowl. What even is the Peach Bowl? I'm just like, to me, when the Huskies would make it to the Rose Bowl and put a hurting on Iowa State or somebody.
Good enough for you.
On New Year's Day, that was peak Husky, and we don't get to enjoy that this year. We're a victim of our own success.
Wow.
You're killing us, Luke. We got to be all in for the Huskies here. I mean, this is 538 was wrong on the presidential election, so I got to believe that 38% chance for the Huskies winning is a good thing for us, because I think they predicted something similar for the presidential, and it ended up exactly wrong. So I'm all in for the Huskies.
This just in, we are now able to call Atlanta for the Washington Huskies. This is changing minute by minute. What do you think of all this, born in Pullman, State Senator Michael Baumgartner?
Well, I would just say, you know, I'd like to quote our current president, soon to be former president, and just say scoreboard, and that my favorite result happened in early November. And so had to get that one in there for you, Pramila. But that's really the scoreboard I'm excited about.
That sounds like not wanting to talk about the Cougars.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. You're supposed to say go Cougars.
There might be a little soreness there as well, too. But I do wish the Huskies well. I don't want to see the SEC do well. So I do hope the Huskies prevail and win the national championship. But I hope all our teams do well. It's a great year for football in the Northwest. Eastern Washington did a fantastic job this year, too. And I think they're going to bring home the national title at the D2 level.
State Senator from Spokane, Republican Michael Baumgartner. Good to have you with us. Thank you.
Anytime, guys.
Congresswoman-elect Pramila Jayapal, when do you go to the district? When do you move into your office in D.C.?
January 3rd is the swearing-in, okay. So we're very excited about that. And thank you. Big shout-out to all the voters of the 7th District that put me here. Huge honor.
KUOW's Luke Burbank, host of Public Radio's Live Wire, tomorrow at 5, and you don't even have to wait that long for your Live Wire, because we're going to be at the Neptune tonight.
Yeah, get the early results tonight at the Neptune Theater. We have Misha Collins from the TV show Supernatural. We have Maria Semple, who wrote the book Where'd You Go, Where You At, Bernadette.
And Go Bernadette, and
Jossie Ross.
Recently, Today Will Be Different.
Yep, Jossie Ross, who's on this show sometimes, and music from Telekinesis. It's going to be a blast, and you will see Bill Radke loitering somewhere in the audience.
Gazing reverentially.
Yes.
Thanks, Luke Burbank. Good to have you here. KUOW's Week in Review. Thank you for tuning in today. Mm-hmm.